headlines. Final results show Ebrahim Raisi has won Iran's presidential election with 62% of the votes. Iran's leader hails people's mass participation in Friday's presidential election, describing the nation as the great winner of the polls. And President-elect Ebrahim Raisi receives congratulatory messages from his three rivals for winning the Friday vote. Hello and welcome. We're here with the latest on the presidential elections in Iran, and I assume that my colleague from the studio next door will be joining us very soon. There he is, Omid, with the election special. Give us the updates, Omid.
All right, Gisu. The 2021 presidential election, as you know, has finally come to an end. There were seven candidates vetted by the Constitutional Council. Three of them quit the race on Tuesday and Wednesday. Friday's vote was between the remaining four. Iran has announced the final results of the June 18 presidential election. Ebrahim Raisi has won the presidential race, becoming the eighth president of the Islamic Republic. He will take office in 45 days. Ebrahim Raisi managed to win nearly 18 million votes, or 61.95%. He has held a number of key posts since the 1979 Islamic Revolution. Raisi has promised to fight corruption and uproot. Mohsen Rezaei ranked second with over 3.4 million votes. He is the secretary of the Expediency Council. His campaign slogan was an overhaul in the country's governance and economy. He also pledged to increase cash subsidies by tenfold. Abdul Nasser Hemmati managed to garner 2.4 million ballots and stand in the third place. He was the governor of the Central Bank of Iran from 2008 until 2021. He had vowed to tackle economic problems such as inflation, unemployment, and housing. And finally, Amir Hossein Ghazizadeh Hashemi has garnered nearly 1 million votes. He has represented the electoral district of Mashhad and Kalat in the legislature chamber since 2008. During his campaign, he promised to create 4 million jobs and bring the inflation down to below 5%. The Interior Ministry put the voter turnout at 48.8%. Over 59.3 million Iranians were eligible to vote on Friday. Nearly 29 million people participated in the election. Let's take a short break. We'll be back. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution has hailed the massive turnout of voters in the June 18th presidential election. In a message, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei described the event as, quote, another brilliant page in the history of people's glories. He said the massive participation of people indicated the firm resolve, hopeful hearts, and watchful eyes. The leader said the huge turnout neutralized the campaigns launched by the enemy's media outlets, as well as ill-wishers to create voter apathy in the election. Ayatollah Khamenei said nothing kept people from casting their ballots and disrupt the elections. Now let's take a look at the front-runner's background and what plans he has outlined during his election campaign. Ebrahim Raisi is a prominent Iranian cleric. He has held several key posts in the judiciary branch since the 1979 Islamic Revolution. He was the prosecutor of the cities of Karaj, Hamadan, as well as the capital, Tehran. Raisi also served as first deputy chief of justice of Iran and the attorney general of the country. In March 2016, Raisi became the chairman of Astan Quds Razavi, and in 2019, he was appointed as the chief judiciary, a post he currently serves. In May, the prominent cleric announced his presidential bid. He ran on a platform of tackling economic problems such as poverty, unemployment, and inflation. Here's more.
My administration will have no red line in fighting corruption, The root cause of injustices in the executive branch of the government must be dried up. The banking, tax, import, and export systems must be reformed.
On the country's economy, Raisi says the current conditions are unacceptable since people are not able to predict their financial situation due to constant fluctuations. He has unveiled a plan on economic recovery.
My economic plan can be summed up in three main points. Of course, there are other important issues I will address later if time allows. But now I would like to mention these three principles, which are the most important ones. The first one is overhauling governance and fighting corruption, inefficiency, and discrimination. The second point concerns supporting underprivileged families and social strata. And the third is increasing production and boosting businesses.
Regarding the 2015 nuclear deal, Raisi says he has set an agenda for securing the removal of anti-Iran sanctions. He highlighted the need for strengthening Iran's economy in the face of sanctions or any other trauma that might afflict the country's economy.
The Iranian nation should do all in its power to confront those who seek to breach the Iranian nation's rights and pursue the removal of sanctions. Definitely, action should be taken to bring about the removal of the sanctions.
On foreign policy, Raisi has vowed to expand ties with countries across the globe, but says Iran's neighbors should be prioritized in foreign relations.
With your help and through strong diplomacy, we can establish good relations with the regional countries and raise the volume of our exports to the neighbors to the best level. We believe in interactions with the entire world in order to solve the country's economic issues, but the regional countries should be a priority.
Well, that's all from me for now, but we'll get back to you soon with more. Yisu, take it away.
Thank you very much. That was my colleague Omid, who has been covering the elections over the past couple of weeks, working very hard these days. Now, President-elect Ebrahim Raisi has been congratulated by other candidates for winning Friday's vote. Mohsen Rezaei, Abdel Nasser Hemati, and Amir Hossein Ghazizadeh Hashemi sent congratulatory messages to Raisi as partial results put him well ahead of his rivals. Rezaei said the June 18th vote has once again approved efforts of the Iranian nation in protecting and strengthening the security and power of their country. Hemati expressed hope that the new administration would bring comfort and prosperity to the nation. Ghazizadeh Hashemi appreciated what he called the massive and glorious turnout of vigilant and loyal people of the country. Iran's current president, Hassan Rouhani, also met with Raisi and congratulated him. He also expressed gratitude for the people's participation, precision, and punctuality in the 13th presidential election. Several foreign leaders have congratulated Iran's president-elect Ebrahim Raisi. Russian President Vladimir Putin expressed hope for what he called further development of constructive cooperation between Moscow and Tehran. Pakistani Prime Minister Imran Khan called for more bilateral cooperation to boost friendly ties and security in the region. The presidents of Turkey, Iraq, Syria also congratulated Raisi on winning the vote. The leader of the Lebanese resistance movement, Hezbollah, and the Palestinian resistance movements also congratulated Raisi on his win. Political commentator Sam Mehdi Torabi believes Iran will pursue a much more proactive foreign policy under President-elect Ebrahim Raisi.
I think, as we heard in the debate, none of the candidates said that they're going to do something very radical, but the tone is going to be different. The approach is going to be one where if we're going to, for example, talk about foreign policy, it's not going to be a situation where we're just waiting for the other side to do something. It will be much more proactive. And I've said this before on Press TV. The important thing about administrations and governments in Iran is not necessarily what they will do. It's how they will react to what others do. So this is the big difference between this incoming administration and the ones that we had, is how they will react to the things that will definitely happen in the region and the things that will be done by the Europeans and the Americans. And this will be a much more proactive and a much more a nationalist and a much less government, an administration which is much less trying to appease the West the way that we unfortunately saw happening in the last 8 years, with basically no results and maybe negative results.
Iran's presidential election was held on Friday, with Ebrahim Raisi emerging as the winner. Despite all the odds, Iranians took part in the election en masse and in a show of solidarity with the establishment. Hashtag trending is next, with a review of some of the viral tweets about the event.
Hello everyone, and welcome to the first post-election hashtag trending with me, Ali Reza. On Friday, Iranians took part in the country's presidential election that saw Ebrahim Raisi as the winner of the vote and the successor to the outgoing president, Hassan Rouhani. The votes were held amid strict measures to keep in line with health guidelines concerning the coronavirus pandemic. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution was among the first who attended the polls and cast his vote. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei described the people's participation in the polls as determining for the country's future. Iranians took part in the election with a high turnout, so the authorities had to extend the voting time several times. Despite all odds and some calls for avoiding the ballot boxes, long lines of voters were formed outside the voting stations even before the polls opened. Almost all polling stations were packed with people until the end of the day. Our first tweet of the day comes from Fatemeh. She wrote, "Voting is the only way to ensure that our values and priorities are represented in the halls of power. Vote for ethics. Vote for hope." Mansour Sadat wrote, "We are still on the promise we made with the Islamic Revolution." Surah tweeted, "And some came to the polls with the photos of their martyrs." Our next comment comes from Hadi. He wrote, "This picture speaks better than 1,000 words. A soldier who has lost both of his hands during the 8-year holy war came to defend freedom and independence of his country once again by voting in Iran elections 2021. You can never defeat this nation. No power can stand against a unified and decisive nation." People from all walks of life took to the polling stations to show their solidarity with the establishment. Many said that neither the country's economic problems nor the international sanctions is enough to discourage them from participating in the polls. Our next tweet comes from Hosniye. She wrote, "We vote even if we are in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean." Our next tweet comes from Sayyid Mohammad Marandi. He said, "While Iran is facing maximum pressure and the region is in chaos, the country carries out regular elections." Mohrazi wrote, "Palestinian and Hezbollah flags are present in Iran's elections." On to our next comment by Mademoiselle. She wrote, "Marzia Ebrahimi, acid attack survivor and outspoken social commentator, posted a picture on her Instagram page showing that she voted in the Iran election 2021. Iranian expatriates in 133 countries came in large numbers to the polling stations to participate in the election. This is while some anti-Iran groups who had gathered outside the Iranian diplomatic missions in the UK, Australia, and New Zealand attacked the people who had shown up to vote. Our next tweet is a video shared by Bob Carter. He wrote, "A brave elderly Iranian lady stood firm when surrounded by a gang of angry anti-Iran royalists when trying to vote at the consulate. The Western-backed Shah and his supporters clearly don't want a democratic Iran." Let's move on to the next photo and a comment by Khairat. She wrote, "All walks of life gathered in the voting station near the tomb of General Qasem Soleimani." See, this is how Iranians pay tribute to their martyred anti-terror hero. On to our final batch of comments for the day. This next one comes from Savant. He wrote, "Iranian Jews and Christians participate in presidential elections. Religious minorities have always played an important part in Iran's politics." And our final comments for today comes from Adam. He wrote, "The veterans of Saddam, US, UK, Germany, most of the free world war is still fighting." He seems to be a veteran of the Iraqi-imposed war on Iran back in the 80s, during which many Western countries supported the Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein. Well, that's going to be it for me and this edition of Hashtag Trending. Take care and bye-bye.
Moving on, Iran's foreign minister has hoped that talks in Vienna to revive the 2015 nuclear deal will deliver a result before the current Iranian government leaves office.
There is a good possibility that we will reach an agreement before the end of our tenure. How soon, sir? Well, we are supposed to leave office by mid-August. And I think there is a good possibility that we can reach an agreement way before.
Saif made the comments at a diplomacy forum in the Turkish city of Antalya. He said that the text for an agreement is getting cleaner and cleaner, but there are still some obstacles. The top diplomat, however, pointed out that issues are not insurmountable. Iran, France, Germany, Britain, Russia, and China have been in talks since April in the Austrian capital. The aim is to make practical arrangements required for the United States to return to a multilateral nuclear deal. Iran wants all sanctions imposed by the U.S. after its 2018 withdrawal to be removed at once in a verifiable manner. The Yemeni army says it has carried out an airstrike on an airbase inside Saudi Arabia. Army spokesman Yahya Sari says a Qassif 2K drone targeted the King Khalid airbase near the southwestern Saudi city of Khamis Mushait. Sari says the operation was successful, with the target being hit precisely. According to Sari, the attack was in response to Saudi Arabia's military aggression and continued siege of Yemen. A Saudi-led military coalition launched a war on Yemen in 2015 with the aim of reinstating a friendly regime there. Yemeni forces have stepped up their retaliatory attacks against the kingdom in recent months. They have been pushing for lifting of the blockade on Yemen and an end to the war that has killed tens of thousands of people. And with that, we come to the end of this edition of World News.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Before Donald Trump, Barack Obama's Justice Department did more to hurt press freedom than any U.S. administration since Richard Nixon. We're prepared for you an article written by Trevor Tim. The piece is titled, Trump Spied on Journalists, So Did Obama. America Needs More Press Freedom Now. The article has been taken from the website of the British newspaper The Guardian. Please stay with us for more of Trevor Tim's article. The U.S. Department of Justice is under increasing fire for the still unfolding scandals involving the secret surveillance of journalists and even members of Congress in the waning days of the Donald Trump presidency. Some of these actions were even initially defended by the Biden administration's Department of Justice. In response to the growing scandal and the scathing condemnations from the surveillance targets at the New York Times, the Washington Post, and CNN, the U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland has vowed the Department of Justice will no longer use legal process to spy on journalists doing their jobs. The New York Times, the Washington Post, and CNN are set to meet with the Justice Department in coming days to seek more information on what happened and extract further promises it won't happen again. But mark my words, if Congress does not pass tough and binding rules that permanently tie the Department of Justice's hands, it will happen again, whether it's a Democrat or a Republican in the White House. Promises are no longer enough. In my circles, these scandals are being portrayed as the Trump White House run amok. While some in the Trump Justice Department may have been motivated by political vengeance, the problem is far bigger than Donald Trump, William Barr, or even the party in charge of the White House. As the reporter Charlie Savage detailed in an excellent piece in the New York Times recently, administrations in both political parties have spied on journalists with increasing abandon for almost two decades, in contravention of internal Department of Justice regulations and against the spirit of the First Amendment. Many people already forget that before Donald Trump was known as enemy number one of press freedom, Barack Obama's Justice Department did more damage to reporters' rights than any administration since Richard Nixon. Yes, Attorney General Merrick Garland needs to immediately put his no more spying on reporters vow into the Department of Justice's official media guidelines, which cover investigations involving journalists. If he doesn't, he or his successor could change their mind in an instant. But why should Americans just trust Garland's pinky promise to not investigate journalists and politicians without an ironclad law? Leaks of confidential and classified information to journalists are vital to U.S. democratic system. Yet, the Department of Justice often diverts huge resources to root out their sources. If you want an example, look no further than ProPublica's recent investigation into the American tax system and how the wealthiest billionaires in the country pay little to no taxes. The series of stories sparked outrage across the country as soon as it was published. Merrick Garland leapt into action, vowing an investigation, only he promised to investigate the leaker and not the tax dodgers. The rise of internet communications has opened the floodgates to authorities' abilities to spy on journalists and root out whistleblowers. They can figure out exactly who journalists are talking to, where, when and how long, and they can silence media lawyers with expansive gag orders that could leave them almost helpless to appeal. And as the coronavirus pandemic has rendered in-person meetings even harder than before, people everywhere are more reliant on the communications infrastructure that can betray them at any time. For real safeguards, Congress needs to act. Perhaps the fact that multiple members of Congress itself, including the representatives Adam Schiff and Eric Swalwell, have now been ensnared in the Department of Justice's leak dragnet, will make them more likely to move than in the past. The irony is Representative Adam Schiff and Representative Eric Swalwell have, of course, been some of Congress's most ardent defenders of surveillance, even during the Trump administration. They fought against surveillance reform that would put in more safeguards at the Department of Justice on multiple occasions. In Representative Schiff's case, despite literally being the co-chair of the Press Freedom Caucus, he inserted a provision into an intelligence bill that would even make it easier for the government to prosecute reporters who publish leaked classified information. Being the victim of unjust surveillance sometimes tends to make even the most devoted surveillance hawks soften their stance. If Attorney General Merrick Garland is promising to bar the surveillance of journalists for the purpose of finding their sources, Congress can simply pass a law holding them to it. Anything else at this point is just empty rhetoric. But there is another issue looming large over this debate, one that many seem hesitant to talk about. Attorney General Merrick Garland has said so far that the Department of Justice won't spy on journalists unless they're engaged in a crime. Well, the Department of Justice has currently attempted to make news gathering a crime in the form of its case against the WikiLeaks founder, Julian Assange. U.S. officials claim Assange is not popular in Washington, D.C., and in mainstream journalism circles. However, the actions described in the indictment against him, most notably the 17 Espionage Act charges, are indistinguishable for what reporters do all the time. Talk to sources, cultivate their trust, request more information, receive classified documents, and eventually publish them. News outlets like the New York Times and Washington Post already know what a threat the case is to their reporters' rights. They've said so in public. However, it's vital that they say this to the Attorney General's face. Right now, there is little pressure on the Department of Justice to drop the Julian Assange charges, despite the fact that virtually every civil liberties and human rights group in the United States has protested against them. If Merrick Garland bars surveillance of journalists doing their jobs, but secures a conviction that makes journalists' jobs a crime, his promises will ultimately be worse than meaningless.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,410 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat, or BAT 5, and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please say send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Africa Today.
This month of June marks the 32nd demise anniversary of Imam Khomeini, the late founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran. The charismatic leader was revered in Iran and across the world, including in African countries. Now, the incarcerated leader of the Islamic movement in Nigeria, Sheikh Ibrahim Zakzaki, says the thoughts of Imam Khomeini have remained relevant even after his demise.
And the thought before this world is the thought of Imam Khomeini. Imam Khomeini is alive because his thoughts are very relevant to this time.
Hello, and a warm welcome to this week's edition of Africa Today. I'm your presenter, Mubarak Kenya. Today, we are focusing on the impact of the thoughts of Imam Khomeini in Africa and how he inspired African nations in their struggle against apartheid and neo-colonialism. So join us as our experts give us an incisive analysis on this subject.
Imam Khomeini in Africa. One of the stated goals of the Islamic Revolution of Iran, led by Imam Khomeini in 1979, was to fight against racism and to support people of color. Imam Khomeini fulfilled his promise immediately after the victory of the Islamic Revolution when he issued an order to cut off Iran's ties with the apartheid regime in South Africa. This decision inspired the struggle for freedom and emancipation in South Africa. After his release from prison, the late Nelson Mandela traveled to Iran 2 times, and in both trips, he met with the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Khamenei.
Now, during his first visit to Iran in 1992, Nelson Mandela emphasized that Imam Khomeini was a source of inspiration for the South African people in their anti-apartheid activities. The leader of the Islamic Revolution recalls here on what transpired during his meeting with Mandela. Now, for more on how Imam Khomeini inspired the people of Africa, we are joined here by Ms. Suhaila Ibrahim Zakzaki, the daughter of Sheikh Ibrahim Zakzaki, the leader of the Islamic Movement of Nigeria. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for having me.
Also with us here today is Said Husseini, the director of Islamic Center for Africa. Thank you for accepting our invitation.
It's a pleasure.
So let's start off with Ms. Suhaila Zakzaki. Now, can you first tell us about your personal acquaintance with the thoughts of Imam Khomeini?
The Imam, primarily with how we view the Imam, is a very, as someone that is a role model and an example for us for what Islamic, an Islamic struggle looks like, a struggle to bring about an Islamic system looks like. Imam was probably one of the, or the only actually example of that, that actually achieved success, because while there is many other who had Islamic revolutionary views and whatnot, with the revolution of Iran, that was the first time that we saw in this world a success of such thing in our time today, right? So Imam was that kind of is that kind of example for us to this day, and especially with his emphasis on Islam and politics and the fact that those are not two separate things, and also Islam in many other aspects of life, like economics and other aspects of life, government and everything.
Thank you very much, Ms. Suhaila Zakzaki, for that.
The the starting point of Imam Khomeini's proximity to the people of Africa after the victory of the 1979 Islamic Revolution was his decision to cut off Iran's ties with the apartheid regime in South Africa. This has been touted one of the Imam's strategic decisions made even before the victory of the revolution. Imam had already said, if the revolution attains victory, we will ties with the apartheid regime in South Africa.
Now, Mr. Husseini, as we know, immediately after the victory of the Islamic Revolution, Imam Khomeini ordered the cutting of ties between Iran and South African apartheid regime. Now, how did this move inspire the liberation movements in that country?
I was speaking to icons of the struggle in South Africa. I was speaking to Nelson Mandela himself. He was saying to me that when the Islamic Revolution in Iran was happening, we actually had all of our hopes lost before that. We were thinking it will be impossible for us to deal with the apartheid state. This state is not going to deem, and this state is not going to go away. We were thinking about other ways how to cope and all of that. But when the victory of Islamic Revolution happened, we said, if it is possible for Iranians to remove a regime which was 2,500 years rooted, we also in South Africa, we will be able to do the same to apartheid regime.
Mr. Hussein Niver, the director of Islamic Center for Africa. Stay tuned for more.
The Islamic Revolution of Iran, under the leadership of Imam Khomeini, created tremendous change for women. Iranian women are free to participate in various social, political, educational, and economic activities in conformity with Islamic tenets. One such recent example is Zahran Emati, an Iranian female Paralympic and Olympic archer. She is now recognized as one of the most inspiring women in the world, winning the 2021 International Women's Day Recognition Award.
We have our own culture and specific dress codes and cannot abandon it because we believe in it. Me and my fellow female athletes prove that we can take part in world sports events with our special dress code and win medals.
The progress made by women in Iran has inspired Muslim women from other parts of the world. In Nigeria recently, an 8 months pregnant woman won a gold medal. Now she took part in the competition wearing the Islamic hijab. Now, Ms. Suhaila Zakzaki, how have Imam Khomeini's viewpoints on women in Islam contributed to the awakening of Muslim women in Africa?
Imam's revolution and the fact that he emphasized on the role of women in society in the Islamic revolution, subsequently in building the country when the revolution succeeded, and in his many writings about Muslim women's role in public society in Islam, that has directly affected a lot of people, I believe, throughout the continent, and definitely in some even ways may have affected others indirectly. But I believe that is one of that is definitely a very great contribution to the idea that Muslim women should participate in public Islamic life as well, not just pray and, you know, pay attention to their relationship with God and not have any say or in anything or even speak, let's say, about Islamic matters, which was a prevalent thought before that. And I believe that to this day, that is the case, that Imam's views on women still influence in a lot of people throughout Africa.
Thank you, Ms. Suhaila Zakzaki, for that. Now we shall take a short break, and when we come back, we shall continue with our discussion on the impact of Imam Khomeini's thoughts in Africa. Stay with us.
Imam Khomeini in Africa.
Imam Khomeini's message resonated well with Africans who are inspired by his firm stand against arrogant powers and unflinching support for the oppressed and downtrodden nations. An African Muslim scholar explains here on how Imam Khomeini inspired African nations. Let's take a listen.
Imam Khomeini, his relationship with Africa was on the basis of humanity, that an African person is a human being like other human beings. He came with a very important terminology when he was talking to Africans and to other people about Africa by introducing a word, al-mustadhaf, which this particular terminology was almost forgotten, even though the Holy Quran in Surah Al-Qasas says clearly, وَنُرِيدُ أَنَّ مُنَّ عَلَى الَّذِينَ اسْتُضْعِفُوا فِي الْأَرْضِ. We want to make those people who are deprived on the land, to make them a'imma, leaders. Imam Khomeini, rahmatullahi alayhi, came with this particular terminology to say that if you look at the world today, you will see two types of people. There are those who are oppressors and those who are oppressed. And oppressed are mustadha'af. So he was talking to people of Africa and other parts of the world as mustadha'af to tell them that, remember, Allah in the Holy Quran will want to make you as leaders, so wake up.
Well, Mr. Hosseini, African people are currently engaged in the struggle against yesterday's colonialists who are today's neo-colonialists. Now, how can the ideas and thoughts of Imam Khomeini be useful in this regard?
Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayh, taught the Iranian nation how to fight against Shah regime. If the people of Africa also take their lessons from Imam Khomeini, I think they are going to be more determined in their struggle against the new colonialism which is taking over Africa in all over the show. And that is the sense of independence, being themselves, studying more, extending their education, thinking about their destiny, and lean on their own capacity and their capabilities and their financial abilities, and work for their own nation. Don't allow other people to interfere in their affairs. I think these are the principles that Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayh, managed to teach the Iranian nation.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hosseini, for that insight.
The African continent has the natural resources and commercial power to become the richest continent in the world. But oppression, bribery, and exploitation by the Western powers hinder its development. Neocolonialism is no doubt the number one problem to Africa's economic development. While it is true that African countries gained independence from the imperialist Western countries, but neocolonialism remains a major challenge.
Now, Ms. Suhaila Zakzaki, as an African, what lessons do you think African nations can get from Imam Khomeini in combating neocolonialism?
Well, the Islamic Revolution in Iran, I would say, is in a way almost parallel to the struggle against neocolonialism, considering at the time, let's say, the Shah in Iran, while an Iranian ruler over Iranian people, was heavily influenced by people from outside who wanted to benefit from that kind of influence and control over the Shah to their benefits, which is no different than what we see currently in throughout the continent today. It's no different from that. It is pretty much exactly what neocolonialism is and what we are living through, what is our reality today. And so in the approach that Imam had to that, to standing up against that kind of system, I believe that we have a lot to learn from that, and we do look to that as an example in so many ways. Even with the Islamic movement in Nigeria, I believe we look to that heavily as an example and an inspiration.
Now, Mr. Husseini, we have heard there Ms. Suhaila Zakzaki talking about how Imam Khomeini inspired the Islamic movement in Nigeria. Now, can you briefly elaborate on Imam Khomeini's role in the awakening and unity of Muslims in Africa?
Imam Khomeini, right from the beginning, was that we are not Shias, not Sunnis, we are Muslims, we are striving toward Islamic revolution, Islamic republic, and for us, we should not fight amongst each other. The Shias are the brothers of the Sunnis, and the Sunnis are the Shia brothers. So those people who had access to the teachings of Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayh, they are those people who have listened to his advice, and today they are the supporters of Islamic revolution. And alhamdulillah, we're enjoying the support of so many Muslim brothers across the globe. The Sunnis are backing the Shias are backing the Sunnis.
Thank you very much for your time and insight, Said Husseini, the director of the Islamic Center for Africa.
The Islamic Republic of Iran has been involved in many humanitarian activities across Africa, including setting up colleges and universities, medical clinics, and agricultural projects which directly benefit the masses. One such project is the Iran Clinic in Ghana's capital, Accra. Speaking during the inauguration of the refurbished clinic, the country's vice president lauded the contributions of the Iranian government to the health sector of Ghana.
The Iran Clinic has got a long history in Ghana, and it is really one of the benefits and the lasting benefits, I hope, of this close relationship between the government and people of Iran and the government of people of Ghana. And I think that what we are seeing here in the Iran Clinic, 300 patients at least every day come through here. Every day, at least 300 patients. And this is why it comes up to close to 100,000 every year. That is a huge contribution to healthcare in Ghana that the Red Crescent, Iranian Red Crescent, is providing. Huge contribution.
Students, let me say salamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi ta'ala wa barakatuh. The essence of coming here this morning to interact with you, much has been said by your head teacher. And the issue here this morning is that my ministry, that is the Ministry of Inner City and Zongo Development, is in collaboration with the Iran Clinic to help bring medical attention to your doorsteps.
Iran's development projects in Africa were one of the topics during a roundtable held in Uganda last year to discuss Imam Khomeini's impact on Africa. Let's take a listen to one of the participants.
We are seeing schools, universities opened in African capitals. They were not there before the revolution. A country like Iran giving support, and it was very wealthy by then, giving support to other countries like it is doing now, it was not there. I've said politically, it stood with the Africans against racism in South Africa. We have seen, even politically, opening embassies. All these embassies we're seeing in Africa were not there before the revolution. When this revolution came, and they wanted to know more about problems of the African communities, African countries, all these embassies were opened so that they interact with the populations, get how we can exchange, cultural exchange, commerce, and political integration.
Now, Ms. Suhaila Zakzaki, how have the thoughts of Imam Khomeini contributed to the progress of Muslims in Nigeria?
especially when the Islamic Revolution succeeded, this brought about a kind of, in some cases very directly, like I can say, for example, in the Islamic movement and for other people as well, but also in some cases very indirectly, that people are much more, I believe, comfortable with comfortably expressing interest in an Islamic system, potentially in Islam, not just as a private thing for people, for individuals, and also for Islam, even in a political sense and other things. And I think that has had a great effect on Nigeria, especially when we look at the Islamic movement, which is heavily influenced by Imam and the Imam's revolution and the Imam's writings and the Imam's thoughts and everything, and his whole life entirely, basically.
Imam Khomeini had unique leadership qualities which endeared him to the masses in Iran and across the world. He introduced himself as the servant of the people and considered the people a source of blessing. The Imam was a serious supporter of the poor and the oppressed, and he forcefully and bitterly rejected economic inequality and aristocracy. In one of his previous speeches, the leader of the Islamic movement in Nigeria says the world needs to emulate Imam Khomeini, as he was a unique leader.
Some people think that just as we have Imam Khomeini in Iran, other Muslim countries should have their own Khomeini type leader. You know, I heard someone was saying they need their own Khomeini. And they need Khomeinis. Look, the world, the whole world, the entire world needs only one Khomeini, and it has one. What it remains for the world is to follow the teaching of Imam Khomeini. You cannot talk of Imam Khomeini being a former leader or an older leader. He's still the leader, and alhamdulillah, he has got a successor in the person of Sayyid Ali Khamenei, Hafizahullah, where the teaching of the Imam continue as if it is the Imam himself is alive.
Well, that wraps it up for this week's edition of Africa Today, and it's been great having you with us. Tell us what you think about our show by dropping us a line through our social media handle. And on behalf of my colleagues here at Africa Today, goodbye for now.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Badr 5, and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.